Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have a very interesting show. It deals with a couple of different subjects kind of put together. And I thought it was important to talk about these things because in some respects, these things I've dealt with separately, and I've even put them together a little bit in the past, but not to the level I'm going to talk about them tonight. And especially, I will reveal a couple of things that I've deliberately avoided tonight, simply because I think that it's okay to talk about it now, simply because science is moving forward and they discover more and more things about the universe, at least the physical part of the universe that we live in at the present time. So I think that that gives me a little more room to be able to explain to all of you more of what it is that when I talk about these areas, how it all fits together. Now, tonight's show is Extraterrestrials, God's Plan, and Prehistory. These areas of ageless wisdom, while they have been discussed for, believe it or not, millenniums, going back in time in our history to about, well, if you go back to the Sumerians, probably 5, 6,000 B.C., I know that's hard to believe, those are numbers that are pretty amazing, and then, of course, you have the Egyptians, and the besides the Egyptians, you have the Indian culture, and that, some of the Indian culture goes back to before 3500 B.C. So what was it these people were talking about that gave us, in our historical context, some pause, you might say? And what they were talking about were extraterrestrials. They said that people came from other worlds. Sometimes they refer to these people as gods, and we'll talk about that tonight, too. And sometimes they refer to it as ambassadors, so to speak, of God. Most of the time, they referred to these events, we'll say, as a reason for there being life on Earth and the existence of humanity and specific life as far as what they were involved with and what they concerned themselves with. That doesn't mean they didn't think that other life was affected by extraterrestrial to God's plan, but a lot of their emphasis, because they were human, was about humanity itself. Okay. That being the, we'll say, the common denominator in history, tonight's show is about prehistory. Prehistory just means that we don't have recorded, usually in writing of some sort, be it cuneiform or whatever, or it doesn't matter. We don't have any form of writing that will tell us anything. And what we do have in oral history is so confused by the sheer time. I mean, before any recorded written history, if you relied upon oral history, it would put us back more than 8,000 years ago. And there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about that, too. Now, a lot of folks will refer to Christian and then before that, the Hebrew Bible. And the two are basically extensions or connections of each other. But in reality, those books seem to have been related to Sumerian texts. And even if they weren't exactly the same, they were very similar. So, at least in the terms of the Hebrew Bible, and the Hebrew Bible, the Christian version of it, Christian being just an extension of it, it comes from mostly prophecies. So, in the fulfillment of prophecy. So, when we examine these aspects, it's real clear, to me at least, that there's a lot of evidence that suggests that the the beginnings of the historical account does go back long before 1400 or 1500 B.C., when many scholars believe the Hebrew Bible began, which is, there's no date on it, by the way. But they just look at the questions of what rulers were doing what in Egypt and that sort of thing. And so, you know, 1600 B.C. would be a lot of the relevant characters, if they existed as they were in the Bible, seem to be coming from that particular era of time. We need to recognize, though, that when something is rewritten from an earlier context, the ethnocentricity factor comes into play, which means that people write from their own understanding and knowledge of the world as they see it at the time, and they interpret the earlier historical accounts using language and technologies, artifacts, relationships based upon the then current elements of society that they live in then. So things get rather confused. Now, I want to discuss where my understandings come from, because the things I'm going to be saying, if they aren't coming from oral tradition, and if they aren't coming from written, then where the heck did I get it from, right? You know? Okay. Well, I've had direct experiences in the mental world. What is the mental world? Well, it's a series of sub-worlds not too easy to be in and be conscious while you're physically alive. And I have had experiences under those circumstances. And there's a part of the mental world called the mental akasha. Now, what is the mental akasha? Everybody thinks it's sort of like a book or something. It's not that, at least in my experience, that is not the mental akasha. I know people talk about, well, it's the Akashic books in the mental world, right? What I experience as the mental akasha is the experiences in the memory of living beings, in this case human beings, that represent their incomplete thoughts to the most part, and some, we'll say, relatively small amount of completed thought. Now, an incomplete thought is a thought that has a lack of truth in it. So we are defining what I'm saying by the word incomplete. So most of the thoughts in the mental akasha are thoughts that people have had that are not integral in their truthfulness, oftentimes blocked by their own egotism or arrogance and caused by a either deliberate but more likely a subconscious desire to create untruthful thinking. But if you compare one to the other of different people's thoughts, you get a collection or average of, we'll call it untruth, but you get more truth than you would just singly trying to understand one thought versus another. And there's ways of actually refining it even better than that if you happen to be able to be there by using your own thought, my own thought, in as a, we'll say, example or comparison, which tends to filter out some of the more more very badly untruthful thoughts. But the point is that this whole collection of thought, at best, reaches somewhere in the 70% to 80% range of truthfulness, even with all the things that can be done from my standpoint of what my capabilities were when I was doing this. And that's not great. And then another thing is you can actually, it's possible to do experiments to determine the value of untruthfulness from another angle. We'll call it more mathematical. And from that strange way of dealing with it, because the whole mental world is really founded in a mathematical structure, it is possible to discern that which is, we'll say, above 70% in accuracy, and below 70% inaccuracy. Now, what's so important about that? Well, in statistics, I don't want to get too, you know, mathy, scientific thing stuff here, but in statistics, anything over 70% has usually some proportion of validity to it. Not maybe that great if it's just at 70%, but it's least considered to have, it's worthwhile considering it as being somewhat valid. Whereas when you fall below that magic 70%, and particularly as you fall significantly below it, like more than 10%, you get down to like 63 or something, the validity is worthless. It's not really even worth considering because you can almost flip a coin and get the same kind of result. That doesn't do much most people any good in trying to determine whether something is true and or accurate in its description. So I kept what I have done is I've kept as best as I can everything above 70% in what I wrote about and what I've talked about on these shows. And so hopefully what I represent, while I recognize it not to be 100% truthful, is better than just saying nothing. So it gives people something better than nothing, but it isn't 100%. And that's better than a lot of guessing. And then in addition to the better than nothing, I also have looked at historical accounts in ancient wisdom of prehistory and seeing to what level other folks like Edgar Cayce, there's a whole bunch of people who have added their thoughts to the, we'll say, what the history in the mental akasha is. But regardless of all of that factor, and regardless of also just using common sense and logic, both together, there's no doubt that I would say I could never get better than 90% accuracy on virtually anything that is truly prehistorical and coming from all the sources that I use. So I would say that the accuracy of what I'm going to say tonight should be taken at with a 10% margin of error under any circumstances. And, of course, when I wrote the textbook, Life's in Meaning, I said exactly the same thing there because it's true. All right, so let's now, it's like a tremendous disclaimer, right? It's really not. It's an explanation of how something can be seemingly impossible to actually to get to a possible outcome. Now, let's talk about the question of extraterrestrials. What am I referring to? Or who am I referring to might be a better question. And the galaxy we exist in, and it's one of billions and billions of galaxies, this is a huge number, is of, we'll say, average age and greater than average size. So, and our galaxy has actually taken in a few other galaxies that have gotten close enough to us to have that happen. So we've grown, we've gotten big. And there's a significance to that in that larger galaxies tend to take on more significant, we'll say, responsibilities within God's plan. Now, why would that be? Well, when a galaxy is of a larger size, it has more possibilities of exchange of creative both thought and activity. And this is multidimensional now. It's not just in the physical dimension that I'm referring to, because galaxies, like everything else, exist in the seven major dimensions of the universe. Each one of those have some dimensions to them. So this is a big deal when you multiply it all out. If something's bigger, it's bigger in all these different ways. And so it makes a big difference in terms of how much of God's plan a particular galaxy is involved in dealing with. Now, part of God's plan includes the plans of other beings, most of who are not other gods, by the way, but who exist in higher dimensions of time and space, who, with, we'll call it the acceptance and permission of the God of this universe, have some play in it. They are somewhat creative, but always within the plan of God, never with, from without it. Okay, so this is a kind of strange thing. Now, some people say, well, what about evil? That evil is against God. Aren't there beings outside this universe that are, like, doing their thing? Well, evil only exists in what we call the physical dimension, as far as the ability to function within a galaxy. So evil from another galaxy in the physical dimension that we're in can definitely interfere even in our galaxy, or more likely, that's very difficult for people, but more likely, evil within our galaxy can certainly have a major effect on our galaxy. But both is true. Both are true. And but evil outside of the whole physical dimension of time and space, evil outside of the universe of God, our God, cannot enter into our galaxy. It's never found a way to do that. There is evil in other gods' universes of physical dimension, but not ours. Assuming that there are physical universes, and I assume there are, but there's a possibility there aren't, but my assumption is there are. So that, and the reason they can't is because the God who created our universe in its total, within all the dimensional times and spaces, creates like a huge shield around its own universe, and that really prevents anything else from creating within it without its, we'll say, choice for that. God does not choose, therefore, there to be evil. It allows evil to exist, but evil cannot exist, strangely, without being part of the universe that we're in. And evil from without the universe finds it impossible to garner the amount of power necessary to enter into the universe as it exists. So the God of our universe has, we'll say, only if it contend with evil from within the physical part of our universe. Evil itself does exist within the astral part of the universe, but it expresses itself predominantly in the physical, although it does to some extent within the astral, and it's working on trying to find a way to express itself in a, we'll say, a very destructive way within the monastic or mental part. And that's where Earth comes in, but we'll get to that. Okay, so here we have an interesting parallel. This universe that we are in is helped out by mostly beings that are, or only beings, who are benevolent and want to participate with God. But evil within the universe is always trying to mess things up as far as it can go. So we have two separate kinds of conditions. And the beings from outside the universe that are functioning create such things as embodies the stars that we're so familiar with. That's an odd thing for us to think about, but they actually help to create stars. They also create things that are more esoteric, like monads, and they do a lot of them. So don't think of them as just, you know, like on the sidelines barely doing anything. They're actually quite involved. And they belong to higher kingdoms than the kingdoms that exist just by our standards within our universe. They actually exist in kingdoms not just of the seven that we're familiar with, at least semi-familiar with, but all the way out to the kingdoms that include other universes. And so ultimately, we could look at this from a standpoint that there are a total of 12 kingdoms, as I wrote about in Chapter 9 of Life's Meaning. what's so important about it? Why 12 kingdoms? Well, each kingdom is directed towards developing a certain kind of life. That's what it does. That's the definition of a kingdom. Now, there's one kingdom that actually creates pre-life. That's the first. And some people refer to it as the mineral or kingdom of chemistry and, you know, non-quote-unquote what we call life. But it, all of that is pre-life. It's going to eventually develop into life, and it's just a part of a continuum of how life is created. So it's part of the kingdoms. And then the next kingdom people are familiar with is the vegetable or plant kingdom type thing. That, you know, that kingdom in and of itself, though, in between and the mineral kingdom, there actually is a sub-kingdom, and that sub-kingdom is in itself a kingdom that doesn't actually reach into fully into plants, and it's not fully into its minerals. It has species of things that are, we'll call them, taking advantage or using some parts, in most cases, of the kingdom below or above, and sometimes both. So that we have some bacteria, a lot of bacteria, a huge number of bacteria. And some of the bacteria do very good things. They break down plants and animal energies into lower forms of energy, which we'll call the mineral kingdom. So they're important. They get recycled things back so that they can be reused. That makes a lot of sense. Some of them are parasites. There's other things like mold and yeast, and, you know, then we have the viruses. So you've got other things that are in between the kingdoms, and they're sort of the sub-kingdom. Also, as a part of the spiritual kingdom is above the human kingdom, and it's actually divided kind of into two parts, actually three. One of the parts of the spiritual kingdom is the energy kingdom. And that's a little hard to understand. Why is energy a spiritual kingdom? We always think of energy as being kind of like, well, it's just there, right? But actually, it doesn't start off being the most undeveloped. It starts off being much more developed than even human life. And then gradually it involutes itself, de-evolves itself, to become something a bit different, because it is a foundation for one of the four forces in physics. It has its foundation, a means of expressing itself through a thing we call gravity. Wow, that's a little deep, right? Gravity. We have to understand that gravity is really the involutionary state of matter, or in many cases, you could even say energy. So it's really how energy expresses itself as it loses some of it, or large amounts of its individual consciousness, and adopts a rudimentary form of group consciousness, which causes it to want to only gravitate towards other energy or matter, depending upon how you look at it. Because matter and energy are interchangeable. So the odd thing about this is that many people have a confusion about that and don't really understand how it all kind of fits together. And this may help tonight to see it. Well, this has an interesting point brought up here. Extraterrestrials, in order to have anything to do with Earth, unless they're evil, remember there's always the evil dudes, but we'll leave them aside for right now, the good guys have come from an area of our own galaxy that specializes in one of the 12 kingdoms of life. All right. We might say, well, why? Because each is specialized to to express how that life will develop on new plants. And they always work within a certain range, we'll say, of where they exist. Some exist further away. The ones that exist further away are in higher, represent higher kingdoms of life, very high kingdoms in some cases. And the ones that are closer by represent the lower kingdoms of life as a general rule, just so we got that. And there's a reason for that. The further away an extraterrestrial is from the location we call Earth within the galaxy, the harder it is for them to even have much to do with us. It's still not that easy to transverse, you know, 100,000 light years of space. Even though it's done in higher dimensions of time and space, even then, that could still be a bit of a chore. They can do it if they do it from, say, the Atmic plane or, you know, some way out there, dimensional time and space place, where they can traverse the entire galaxy in a matter of a day or two or something. That's not a problem. But for beings that are, you know, dealing with the mineral life or the plant life, etc., they have to be a lot closer in because they are not as advanced in their consciousness. They're not, you know, they're not like super monadically endowed, and they don't have some super kind of consciousness. They are into the most highest type of beings, and so they, in a strictly practical sense, need to be closer. Now, how does this apply in terms of the energy things? Well, they apply energies to by using something called the rays. The ray is a focus of one of the seven specific kinds of energy that exists within a universe. There are seven kinds. And they alter the focus of these seven rays, which changes the emphasis of growth of sense in life forms on a planet, on Earth as an example, because they are trying to accelerate Earth as quickly as possible. Right now, we've got four different of these rays, which corresponds to senses, being developed more so than the other senses in all life forms that have senses of that nature. Now, some life forms don't have all the senses, so only the senses they have that correspond to one of the rays of focus develops. Yeah, okay, so that kind of makes sense. And this is even affects minerals, affects pre-life. It affects the development of certain kinds of minerals at a particular time on a planet more than others. Oh, and so it affects things like chemistry. Things that we don't think of as having much to do with the development of life. But actually, chemistry comes before life. The life as we call life. So this is how they express themselves. But remember now that these extraterrestrials are working from a connection to one of the 12 different kingdoms. And in a hierarchical sense, those kingdoms vary from just basically the chemistry side of things, all the way to, believe it or not, the eventual creation of beings who will leave this universe and may at some point in their own existence become gods themselves. Wow, because that's a whole realm so much vast beyond what we're talking about in general. Because in order to become a being like the god of our universe, which is the lowest form of a god, you've got to reach the highest level of kingdoms, which is the creation of universes itself. Whew. Pretty far out there. All right, so there's actually a whole group of, we'll call them extraterrestrials, that do this thing. They actually work with that part of kingdoms that exist to create universes. And they are concerned about how they can contribute to the planetary growth so that universes will benefit in the future. The development of universes, new universes. And you can say, well, how could that possibly have anything to do with Earth, because Earth is so primitive relative to these other extraterrestrial beings? Why would they even be concerned about it? Well, normally they wouldn't. It just so happens that Earth is one of the few planets that is involved in a universal role-play experiment to deal with some of the more serious problems dealing with evil and its growth in the mental spheres. And that causes a lot of attention to be drawn to Earth, even from beings that normally really wouldn't be all that involved with Earth. So we've got full attention going here. And it also means that all 12 of these different kingdom sources of, we'll call them extraterrestrials, actually have something to do with Earth, which is not that common. Some planets only have like 7, some have. It depends on the planet and how it's developing itself. Now, what does this all mean? It means that if you are into astrology, and people talk about it all the time, some people say, well, it's a bunch of nonsense, and people say, well, it's obviously true, but I don't know why. It comes from the attention of these different extraterrestrial factions and how they are choosing to alter the way the rays are affecting different parts of life. So when a ray is being expressed on the planet, in some cases it's being accentuated by these extraterrestrials to some extent, and they do it by thought, as much as you may find that hard to understand. It's not necessarily mental thought, but they do it by a kind of thought. And so when they're focused on their kind of way of doing things, it affects the senses of life that can be sensitive to that way. So they may affect humans, and they may not affect humans. They may affect some plants, and they may not affect others. And they may affect animals and not affect minerals. This is a kind of interesting scenario. Now, in general, the rays are affecting all life pretty much at the same time that has a corresponding sense. But it's mitigated now by these extraterrestrials who are doing fine-tuning within that general formula. And that kind of changes and alters the complexity of the circumstances. And it's one of the reasons that, amazingly, astrology has validity in its own right, from that standpoint. In other words, when we talk about the 12 constellations, we're really talking about 12 categories of extraterrestrials from different parts of our galaxy. Now, you could say, well, that sounds like a fairy tale thing. How do I know it's true? Well, you can start, if you have this information, you can start using it to examine different life forms and see if it kind of holds up to be true. Because what I'm giving is a formula that you could test out to see if it were true. And you try it and see. So this is definitely new information. So what does it all mean in terms of us and our prehistory? Our prehistory is affected by all these different extraterrestrials having somewhat different purposes, although they're all trying to grow more of God. None of them are trying to do anything bad to us. And trying to find ways of countering evil, which is certainly trying to do bad to us. And they are doing this in concert, but it's sort of like a concert similar to a jam session rather than a concert written as a symphony by one being. And so they're all contributing to this, but each has some effect on the others, and each other has choices that they make somewhat independently. I know that sounds hard to believe. Well, why independently? Why don't they just all work together? Well, you see, they don't all have the same consciousness. Some of them can't communicate together in some respects, and they don't even live in the same general areas because some can't deal with the kinds of distances that others can. So, in reality, this is the only way it works, and it does something that's good, which is it adds more choice to and creativity to each, because otherwise, with this type of hierarchical system in play, and if everyone was affecting all the other ones, the highest would tend to overrun the lower extraterrestrials in their thought and actions, and so they wouldn't have the same level of creativity or freedom. So the system is designed so that it will continue to develop that, even though there is still a hierarchy in the system. There certainly is, but it's not absolute, and it isn't controlling on those that are lower. As a matter of fact, the odd thing about the system, as is so true in most things in angels' wisdom, is that the lower control. The extraterrestrials that are working on the most low forms of life and pre-life actually have more effect on the existence of a planet, such as Earth, in the physical world especially, than any other of the extraterrestrials that are involved in this. Now, are extraterrestrials, are these extraterrestrials like us, are they like people? No. As a matter of fact, I'm talking about extraterrestrials that are beyond human in every case. Every case. Now, why is that? Why could there be some humans, you know, like 30 light years from us? Why could they be doing something? Well, humans do not have sufficient consciousness in their kingdom to be able to communicate with any other higher source than themselves, except in one direction. I mean, they can pray to God, and they can, but they don't have a bi-directional communication system because their consciousness is too limited to achieve that goal. They're too self-focused, too selfish. So now there's a small, very small fraction, exceptions. There's some of the most advanced, very advanced humans, almost out of the human kingdom, have a little bit of that. They're not enough to make, you know, like you're not going to say, oh, well, gee, they're going to do something super duper on another planet. No, but they have a little bit maybe of communication. That's about it. So this is something to consider. So far as I've explained this whole system, which is pretty new for some people to get, you know, to fathom, we have a whole other side to our existence that we are pretty much unaware of. And we're going to talk more about this as we continue with tonight's show, and we will do that in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about extraterrestrials, God's plan, and prehistory. And one of the things that comes to mind when I do these shows now is that they have on the History Channel, they have a show that deals with extraterrestrial, supposedly, interference, or we'll say additions to the life on Earth. And some of the things that are on that show I believe to be accurate. Some of them I think are a reach. But regardless, at least people are talking about it, and that's probably worthwhile. The reason or reasons for the existence of extraterrestrials is all over the place, though. So unlike what I'm saying, you hear everything from, well, they really came here to do us harm, to they came here to control us. They liked our women, so they had sex. They wanted to have this. They had slaves. They wanted our gold. They wanted this. They wanted that. You know, and I don't know. There's only an inkling of truth to most of those things, and they aren't even for the related reasons that have been attributed to them. So it's a kind of a strange, we'll say, show from that standpoint, because some of the things they say happened did, but the reasons they attribute to those things are very often misunderstood. And the main reason is that the show pretty much, but not 100%, tries to avoid anything about God. So it's attributing almost everything to some mechanical model, and that's a whole other point. Sometimes it's kind of funny because I've seen a few of the shows where they say, well, it's kind of evolutionary, but not really because the extraterrestrials did the changing. But at some point, something changed the life to made the extraterrestrials, and if it wasn't evolution, okay, then who did it? Because there had to be a beginning if it wasn't God. God creates itself, and life creates itself. But if you don't believe in those, then you have a problem with the chicken and the egg problem, and you get into the same, we'll say, confused logic. And I understand that a show like this probably doesn't want to extol any particular, we'll call it the theological or spiritual structure. Sometimes they do, but because they have individuals to talk about what they want to talk about. But it's nonetheless pretty much left out. And some things that are really for spiritual motives and reasons, strange, we'll say, material reasons are implied. All right, so let me continue on with some of the elements of this plan on God's part. The plan is to help planets to accelerate the growth of life. without using just the structure of evolution, because the structure of evolution to create life is highly improbable and unsuccessful. And life more abundant is truly what this system is about. So you want as much life created in God's plan in as many worlds as possible, with a lot of different kinds of emphasis of forms of life, types of life, motives of life, all of them hopefully along God's plan, though, and God's motives, but allowing freedom for evil and for those who choose not to believe in God to do so. So it's a system to accelerate the growth of life, and extraterrestrials are a useful component when they reach a level of consciousness which allows them to do something about it. Only evil, with its low consciousness, can do anything really harmful, because all the extraterrestrials, other than evil, are good, and they seek to do good as much as possible. That doesn't mean they're perfect. We shouldn't think that no mistake can be made by even a fairly advanced and conscious being, because consciousness has a spectrum. And yes, once you get outside the human kingdom, number of mistakes significantly reduce, and you can mostly do great things. But you've got to allow, if you're one of these beings, freedom for life to grow. And part of that freedom is the possibility that life is going to do bad things, even if you'd like it to do good, because that's the way life is. It sometimes doesn't go down the road that you would like. And, yes, you can do some things to try to modify that. But for the most part, almost anything that's an extraterrestrial being would do to try to improve life in a world that's going awry would make things worse if it interfered in some relatively direct way. I know that sounds hard to understand, because we all would want to. It's like, well, if I have a kid, I'm not going to let it just do anything it wants. But this isn't like having a kid. A planet is a huge, we'll say, experiment in the consciousness of billions of people, and there's other life forms that are much lower consciousness. And the results can be so intricate that doing anything might destroy more creativity then it will create a good result that leads people away from evil. And a world of people who are uncreative is possibly worse than a world that has to struggle with evil. And in most cases, it is worse. So the primary factor is to bring a balance to three parts of God's mind on a planet. Those three parts, again, are creativity, along with love, or some people call consciousness, or planning and givingness. And those two parts together becomes God's thought, which is spiritual, when it's balanced and large enough. And the third part is intelligent interactions, or unfortunately, if beings choose to not do so, unintelligent, and we'll say force-producing interactions. But in either case, it's necessary to have those three parts balanced together. When they are balanced, then interactions become more intelligent. Time and space move together more. There's less wasted time, less forces, so less suffering and pain, and a closer connection to spirit, the thought of God. It all comes together. That's the goal, but the methods employed are rather obtuse to the goal. Extraterrestrials are almost forbidden in most circumstances from directly controlling the minds and or to a good extent the interactions of people and even of lower forms of life. Now, this has a big deal in it, because they can indirectly have an effect by affecting the rays as they're focused in on the senses in different life forms, and and the emphasis of a particular way in a certain way in respect to what kingdom the extraterrestrial source is coming from. Now, the rays are affected not by an individual of extraterrestrials, but by a group of them choosing to do this as a group, because it's such a vast distance and such a tremendous amount of energy we're talking about. No one individual of most extraterrestrials could make a significant dent in it, so they have to work together as a team to be able to pull this off very often. All right, so I know it's a mouthful. You say to yourself, well, this is a little more complicated than I expect. I know it is. That's one of the reasons I haven't done a show to this extent like this before. But I'm figuring all of you listening out there have grown to some extent. Maybe it's all a fantasy in my mind. Right? And we could talk about these things. Plus, like I said, there's certain scientific advancements that we're either about to find out within the next few years or right there now that allows me to go a little deeper into the situation. All right, so, again, let's look at this situation and how, then, do these groups of extraterrestrials manage to achieve such a phenomenal goal or such a long distance? Well, they have to obviously exceed the speed of light, especially if they're on the other side of the galaxy. It's going to be, you know, otherwise that wouldn't do much good. But how do they achieve that? Well, the speed of light is a speed based upon the dense physical world, right where we are right now. Even the etheric speed of light is actually up to over a little over two times faster than what we conceive of as the speed of light in the dense physical world as we measure it from our perspective. But when you go into other dimensions of time and space, the speed of light dramatically changes. At the height of the monastic realm, the mental world, the speed of light is 1,056 times, that's an odd number, greater than the speed of light here, where we are. That's a lot. I mean, it's not enough to make as much of a difference as you might think, depending upon how far away you are, but it's still a lot. And so, say, folks that are, say, a couple hundred light years away, well, within a couple of months, they can directly affect things here. That's not bad. A couple months isn't bad. They can't immediately react, but they can react within a couple months, and things, as they turn out on Earth, you've got usually at least that much time. So that puts it within, you know, target range. And these beings have consciousness higher than the monastic realm. So some of them are beyond the Buddhic. The Buddhic realm is over 140,000. Wow. And that's speed of light. Now, that's really in comparison to the etheric speed of light. So we're really talking, it's probably double that in our comparison, depending upon how much you're savvy to the idea that electromagnetic elements of the speed of light suggest the speed of light is actually faster than we perceive. And there's a guy in Germany who proved this about like 15 years ago, but nobody's been looking. Anyway, back to the point I'm trying to get at. In these circumstances, the bottom line for beings who are even moderately beyond the human is if they're not real far away, they can do a lot to service Earth. If they were just human, they could do nothing. Just as we could do nothing, if we wanted to even travel in a physical sense to their world, and there isn't just one, doing so would take us lifetimes, and it would be a very difficult journey if we could even do it. But we really couldn't, because we would need more energy than is possible. You really can't ever achieve much more than about a tenth of the speed of light in any practical sense, trying to use energy itself as the means. Because the energy gets converted into mass, and the mass becomes requires more energy, and They just never get there. So how do you do it? Well, you do it through higher dimensions of time and space, and you don't move mass, you move the energy within these higher bodies. Then you have to be able to create a lower body and even then create other things, like maybe even a spaceship to protect the lower body. But in doing so, you do this when you get to where you're going, not beforehand. So if you wanted to travel and you're 100 light years away, you want to travel to Earth, or a real up close visit, you could get here in about a month or two, month and a half, 2 months. And you could, if you could travel at the highest part of the Manhattan world. Wow. And so, close to the highest part, anyway. If you're traveling within the Manhattan world, you could travel 960 times the speed of etheric light, which would be 1,800 times the normal speed of light, as we understand it. So it would tremendously, you could get here very quickly on that basis, obviously. And it would be, then when you got here, you would have to create an astral and a physical body to be here in physical form. And then if you're in physical form, you have to have things to protect you just like anybody else. You're now open to all the dangers of being in physical form. But you could do that. You can create these things with what? Consciousness. Your own thought can create them. If you have, you're outside the human kingdom and advanced enough. Wow, that sounds pretty far out, huh? Yes, and that's how extraterrestrials basically travel. All that just to get to that one idea? Okay, well, listen, this is not an easy show tonight. There's a lot of new things to think about. And so we've got to kind of build up to get to those new things. Yeah, if you want to travel, you do it with your higher consciousness and your ability to think at levels that we can't understand. And you have to be able to fully be conscious in these higher dimensions. That's what higher consciousness means. And you have to be able to also creatively think about what you're going to do and to create, therefore, the elements of form in the dimensions where you don't, where you're going to exist in, but you're not going to take it with you because you can't take it with you. You have to create everything when you get there. Well, tell me that isn't pretty odd. So you don't get into your spaceship and take off and go 100 light years or so because you'll never get there. And if you were in a spaceship of even a greater, distance, it would be even harder. Now, I know about the idea of warping space and all the other supposed ways that you could kind of get around. That's okay for very nearby kinds of jaunts, and you wouldn't have to build another spaceship to do that if you're not going very far. But if you're really going, significant distances across the galaxy, even that the warping thing doesn't really help much. I mean, people say, well, what about the wormholes? Can't we do that, the wormhole? Well, there might be a way of doing that, too. But I'm saying that this is a much simpler way for those beings who are higher in consciousness. Someday we may try some of the lower ways as humans, but I don't think we'll have much success. Because these higher ways are kind of, there's deliberate obstacles in the universe to prevent lower consciousness beings from coming from wherever and doing havoc. I know we've got it all over our science fiction, and we've gotten to the point where we just believe it must be true. After all, every other science fiction blank's got that happening, right? Well, if you don't follow the things I'm talking about, that's all you're going to have to. You've got to create some way for these bad extraterrestrial dudes, the bad aliens, to come and do bad things. But the truth is, if there were such beings, we would probably have ceased to exist a long time ago. And the reason for it is so far advanced in us, but so bad, obviously, that they would just wipe us out in one sneeze. And there'd be no reason for them not to, in a sense. Many people say, well, why would they even care? Well, they might if they're really bad dudes. I don't know. You know, now, could there be some really good ones that just aren't high enough in consciousness and still more like humans? Maybe. Like I said, I don't think it's... I think that there's a relationship between consciousness and the ability to do good. And you need to get out of the human kingdom to have that kind of move in only one direction, which is towards the good or towards God. If you're in the human kingdom, you're kind of caught in a back-and-forth thing, and that back-and-forth thing will prevent you from being able to solve the problems of that kind of trauma. So I think that it's an interesting point. Again, these are my opinions. I don't have direct knowledge that otherwise. And, of course, if you watch the alien shows or the extraterrestrial program, or they have their own theories about it, different from what I'm suggesting. All right. So God's plan is to basically grow more life and do it as quickly as possible, because that's what is God's growth. God grows by the life that is grown within its universe. It doesn't choose to grow on its own, because that would be boring and a puppet show. Instead, it lets life do it, somewhat separated from God's independent thought. You can choose to participate with God, but you've got to find that part of yourself that is more godlike, and then use that to create. That advances you towards God and eventually advances you out of the human kingdom. Ah, not a bad thing. So this is not a punishment plan. It's not a plan of vengeance. I know, the Old Testament, vengeance is mine, said the Lord. These are explanations for things that seem to be punitive when they're mostly karmic related. And sometimes they may be tests. Now, this is where the prehistory thing comes in. Extraterrestrials do come here. In the present day, I don't think they have a heck of a lot to do with humans. I know people are getting brought up into spaceships all the time. Well, that's a whole other explanation for that. And I'm not saying that that isn't a true experience. It's just not the experience that people think it is. And I've talked about that before, so you've probably heard it if you've heard some of my earlier shows. But for the real extraterrestrials to come here, they aren't trying to interfere very much directly with human beings. That doesn't mean they can't choose to under rare circumstances. I believe there have been times in history before this time when extraterrestrials have had more input into some parts of human development. Take the United States. I think that some of the founders, maybe about a dozen or so, particularly the ones who were Masonic and who, you know, were into the ageless wisdom as it was represented through that order, those, Freemasons, those folks, and a bunch of others who weren't necessarily Freemasons but were associated in some ways, those folks, I believe, had direct contact with some extraterrestrial. Now, I said, sounds hard to believe, but they actually, there are some testimonials from them about this sort of thing. And so you have to question, I mean, if you're really going to believe that they were such great thinkers and great men, although they certainly had women involved with them, then you have to think that, well, there was something to some of their other stories about some kind of extraterrestrial effect. Now, why do I think this? Well, it's not because of exactly direct knowledge. Although in the Akashic part of the monastic realm, I've discovered some of the, we'll say, parts that have great thinkers in them, including some of the founders. And that doesn't mean it's perfect. Remember, everything there is kind of up and grabbed and suspicious. But it looks to me as though there was some kind of sudden flooding of thought and structure to these folks' consciousness beyond just the knowledge that they had from other people who have written about and talked about what we call freedom and the structure of I'll call it our Constitution. Our Constitution, the United States Constitution, is a remarkable instrument. If it were followed to the T, which it is not, unfortunately, it's mostly about a third of the time these days, it's being ignored for one reason or another, either by the legislature or the president or these days also the Supreme Court. Like, when you look at it from that standpoint, though, a document written hundreds of years ago by folks who really didn't have the experience of having lived in this country because they were creating it, at least on paper. And they came up with this ultimate solution, which is an amazing document because it fosters freedom and it chooses to protect people from government. That's its main job. Limit government so that people can be more free. And it also allows people to be free somewhat from the interactions through government on each other. But it does so in a simplistic, simple way. I mean, no, it's very direct. It's brilliant. I think there was some input from, we'll say, extraterrestrial source about some of the parts of what would be considered to be our Constitution. And this sounds maybe crazy. You know, I don't mind sounding crazy. I mean, people say, well, you sound nuts. The reason I suggest this is because the document itself, based upon my own experiences within the monastic realm, is beyond what I experienced as a thought of the people that supposedly wrote it. That, to me, is like, wait a second. Yes, you have some additive benefit from people getting together, et cetera, you know, but this, and these are very conscious people for the day, and it would be so even today, but not literally as conscious as the most conscious people are somewhat today, because those people are still live with us, right? We incarnate. And so the bottom line is that there must have been some other help. Now, some people say, well, it was divine. And actually, some of the founders say that. But to them, divine might have been extraterrestrial. And this is where I want to get into this idea of God. If extraterrestrials are representing God, that's who they work for. They're like God. I mean, to us, in perspective. They're not anything in their perspective even close to God. But from our perspective, that could very easily be true. And if you go way back in time, that would almost certainly be true. I mean, we would seem like gods if we went back thousands of years ago. Just with our technology, much less our knowledge about everything else, the knowledge would overwhelm people, and then our own consciousness is higher. Consciousness grows in humanity, as a rule, each generation. So it's going up on an average. Some people's consciousness don't necessarily go up from each lifetime to the next, but on an average, the whole thing's growing. That's the whole purpose of it, right? Evil's there to try to destroy it. I got it. I know. But it's not as successful. It hasn't been as it would like to be. So from that standpoint, yeah, maybe it's all part of God, you know, to some folks. That's, and there was a much more religious interpretation theological about a godly expression in things from folks several hundred years ago than today, partly because the sixth ray was in focus on the senses, the solar plexus, giving people a closer feeling about God. And that because of their feeling about God being stronger, they interpreted more things as coming from God, even if it was an extraterrestrial, which they wouldn't have maybe a huge understanding about. Certainly some of these extraterrestrials at some point, I don't think by the founders of this country, though, were seen as angels. Actually, angels too exist, but they are not people. They are energy beings. And believe it or not, some of the extraterrestrials I'm referring to can include energy beings. Now, that's going to throw a monkey wrench and everything. But remember, these are the energy beings that are very far advanced, not the ones that are, like devas that are running around helping plants grow. This is a whole different kind of being. We each have one of these beings that helps us over time. It's a alter ego of our soul, and it's called the oversoul, or higher soul, or sometimes the solar angel. So these are beings that each person has connected to. And that's the weird thing about it. Now, they are not any longer considered extraterrestrials because they choose to be here for a long time, but they did come from other worlds. Oh, throw a monkey wrench in there. Yeah, they didn't actually develop here on Earth. They came from other worlds and helped the souls that came here. So they kind of get together. Souls came from a different place than the solar angels. Solar angels are more advanced than a human soul. And they work together. One solar angel per person works with one soul. Most of the time, that's a true statement. Wow. Pretty interesting stuff. All right. And also solar angels help group souls, but then it's a solar angel for a group soul which helps could be any number of life forms, because those life forms do not have an individual soul, so they're not very creative, and they can be anything from a fly to a mouse to a bird. But whatever they are, there's a group soul involved and its corresponding solar angel. That solar angel is not as advanced as an individual connected to an individual solar angel connected to a human being and connected to an individual human soul. Hard to understand. Our conscience comes from our solar angel, not from our soul, individual soul. Wow. All right, so these beings are there, too, and we could claim they're all extraterrestrials, although they've been here for a long time now, so I would say not so much. I wouldn't use that phrase. Extraterrestrials, I say, are transient. That's how I'm defining them. They may be here 100 years. That's a long time for them, I think, but not for thousands. Not for thousands. I doubt it. The reason for it is this, that, again, they're not here to govern or to manipulate or to force life to be a certain way. They're here to encourage creation, encourage development, help the development of consciousness, and maybe make a few suggestions if the beings they're talking to, the human beings they're talking to, are advanced enough. They'd have to be very far advanced, so they have much communication. That's good. You don't want them monkeying around with life everywhere and every minute, because the planet will become a puppet show. And it'll be someone else's life that's being created, rather than each life creating itself, which is what God wants. So the extraterrestrials follow God's plan, and God's plan is life is to create itself, not you go out and you tell it what to do and it'll do it, if it doesn't hit it over the head or something. That's not the plan at all. All right. So let's talk about the prehistory part about this. Because we've covered a lot of territory, and some of it I think is pretty interesting, but then there's also the question of, well, how does this all fit in with where we've come from? And if it's all true, or most of it's true, remember, disclaimer, if I'm 90% correct, I'll be tickled pink and very happy. But if it's, you know, 70% correct, that's my bottom line. I'm trying to at least get to that level. So please forgive me for whatever I say that bears out not to be true. Okay? And again, tonight's show is to help everybody to think more about this, to find through their own thought process, their own consciousness, what they find to be true. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything, because I might convince myself that what I'm saying is 100% true. All right, so prehistory. Well, I've talked a lot about this, but I'm going to go through it from a different angle or some different angle tonight so that we can gain a little bit more perspective on this. If we go back in time, and before there were human beings, a number of animals were brought to a very, we'll call it, almost human-like physical condition by developing four of the centers in their bodies at a time, again, coming from extraterrestrials, focusing the ray energies on Earth in a whole bunch of different, well, called different ways. And it's producing these effects that are changing, relatively changing life in the direction of humans. So the first thing, before you want to do anything, if you're going to try to develop a human being, is you need to have a physical form and then an astral form and a lower mental form as much as possible that is, we'll say, the closest you can get to the general archetype of what humans on Earth are going to pretty much exist as. And they're very similar to other human beings. I don't want you to think Earth humans are so different from all other humans. Actually, there's a much more similarity. Humans have a great deal of similarity, no matter what world they're on. But, I mean, they're not going to look identical. They're not going to be exactly the same. But they will be bipedal. They will have two arms, two legs. Yeah, really, in a head. Yeah, really, all that is going to be part of the human reasons for this. It has to do with the way the senses work, which is interconnected to how the body works, and that's in organs, etc. And so there's a lot of similarity. The human's going to have seven senses, five of form, we're all familiar with those, and two of spirit, or God. And those come from the consciousness within the heart chakra and the crown or head chakra. And humans have consciousness in those two centers. No other animal does. So that makes us special because we have a sense of our creator. And no other animal does. So you take the animals with only five senses. And you have to develop the other two senses without the consciousness part, because you cannot create a human out of an animal. I know, well, I get all the evolutionists screaming at me right now. You can't do it because the consciousness part of a human, it comes from the soul and not the consciousness in the two chakras, in the heart and crown chakra. Comes from the soul and not from the animal itself. The animal just can't develop it itself. Now, why not? Why can't animals develop a sense of their creator? I mean, heck, they can seem to sense so many other things, sometimes better than humans do in some ways. So why not? Why can't they be have a sense of their creator? And the answer to this is of very critical importance. No animal has an individual soul. It can develop an individual part of a group soul if it is a pet of a human being, and that's the most it can do. It does not have an individual soul, and it doesn't have an individual oversoul or solar angel. Zippo, none, and it doesn't. Its solar angel and soul do not have an individual monad, if it's an animal. They're all group. And without the individual souls, you don't develop a strong individual consciousness, which is the hallmark of God and a human being. It's the first godly step beyond animal life. And it's critical, and you can't develop it through evolution. You can't. Why not? Well, this is a difficult thing to talk about, but evolution is a reductionist model. Everybody thinks that it adds, okay? You get this kind of thing, you get that kind of thing, and eventually it adds up to a human thing. Well, that if that were true, that'd be great. It's true in terms of form only. It doesn't work in terms of consciousness. There has never been found an element to explain consciousness in evolution. Never. That's why the evolutionists don't believe in God, usually. Because their consciousness is limited because they exclude it from their own model, and they also, many scientists do, even if they're not into evolutionary science. So it's a kind of a difficult thing for them. Because they exclude it from what, if you don't believe something exists, or you can't define it in any existence, other than, well, it must come from some electrical, chemical, whatever, that's happening inside a thing we call the brain, and that's what causes consciousness. Really? Okay. So, we have a model in which the form side is developing from the ground up, so to speak. The consciousness side is developing from the top down. Top down. Monads create souls, and they even create solar angels, who are two different kinds of sources of consciousness. And those two sources of consciousness have group consciousness in the lower forms coming from less developed monads, and then they have individual consciousness coming from monads of a higher level of consciousness. And they've always developed that. They have a hierarchy. Some monads just develop group consciousness because they're just starting off learning how to help life to become self-created. And they're going through this process. So, and a monad does not involve itself in interactions. No interactions with any other life other than themselves. So, therefore, they allow interactions to be part of life below them so they don't contaminate or control life. Wow, that's kind of an interesting idea. All right, and so consciousness. In order to have consciousness in the heart and crown chakras. Now, you can have consciousness in the lower centers because it just tells you about the form of everything. You're conscious of how other things are in form, but not in their own consciousness itself, unless you're a pet of a human. Then they get into a kind of a little gray area, but it's still that they don't have an individual soul. And eventually you have to develop an animal, okay, and this is what the extraterrestrials were involved in doing. They have to develop an animal that has extremely good, but balanced, sometimes not the best in terms of ability, but extremely good in balance of the five lower senses. Humans are great in the balance of their senses. They don't have the best sense in comparison to some other animals, no matter what sense we're talking about. They don't have the best sense of smell. They don't have the best sense of taste. They don't have the best sense of touch. Hearing, sight? Really? They don't have the best senses, but they have the best balance of senses so that they can bring the senses together collectively as one sense better than other forms of life lower than them. Ah. So the first thing you want to do is to get an animal to get this balance going. Now, you're going to have to give up some of that animal's extraordinary sense of one or two or whatever to get the balance. Sometimes you can raise all the senses. Sometimes you have to lower one or two of them to balance them out so that the consciousness can be brought together and the animal is aware of all of its senses at close to or preferably exactly the same time, which provides enormous consciousness. Oh, the information comes together all at once. You don't have as much time lag from and not as much separation from time from space, and you have more intelligent activity. Got it. And that leads then to a connection to higher consciousness. Oh, okay. So it starts making some sense. So the first thing is you try to develop an animal like what I'm just talking about. That's done by certain parts of evolution, and it's also done by changing some parts of the environment, deliberately altering it by using the rays. You actually could change the physical earth around to some extent. So animals are challenged in certain ways, and certain things are produced, and you still allow evolution to take its place, but only in terms of the form. Eventually the senses of form come together, you get a really well-balanced animal. But you still got the heart and crown chakras. These centers may be balanced too, if you can get them balanced with the lower ones. It's very hard to do this because they don't have consciousness connected to them. They can't because they're coming from a group soul, and the group soul cannot bring consciousness into those two centers because they require a level of individuality and individual creation to find, understand, and create more spirit in itself. Okay, so that's a big problem, but we'll get to that. So now you're reaching a point where things are looking pretty good, okay? And you say, okay, calling all souls, and income from other worlds, sometimes, human souls. This is the very beginning of our present incarnation of our planet. Some of them came from a prior planet, similar to Earth, which was like a different incarnation of Earth's existence, so to speak. But regardless of how you want to see that, the souls are coming in. Now they come in, and now they need to be connected to a monad. The monads don't necessarily change. They're pretty much staying around Earth, but souls come in and out. Why? Because some souls do better, they may go elsewhere or stay. Some souls don't do so well, and they may go to a less developed world where humans are less conscious. The more developed souls are able to create humans at the level that is needed at the time. Now, here's the weird thing about it. The least developed, not the most developed, individual souls came to Earth about 22.5 million years ago to try to build consciousness in the crown and heart centers in three different bodies, the mental, the lower mental, the astral, and the physical bodies of these particular animals that I'm talking about. Do those animals exist anymore? No. So the attempt was to take animals that were developed at this time, they were sort of in the ape category, and to produce a human being. So this is all taking place with extraterrestrials present. Most of them came from worlds not too far away from Earth, within say 50 to 100 light years, and some life from within, believe it or not, our own solar system. That's hard to understand that. I'll get to that in a minute. But the point is that, okay, so they're going to try and put this all together and say, okay, let's do the experiment. We got the solar angel with a soul here connected to a monad that's going to try to do humans on Earth. This is a monad has only created animals and other things up to this part of its existence. And now it's yeah, let's give it a shot. So it goes ahead and says, we're ready, let's give it a shot and give it a try. And so the animal, as we understand it, is already in existence. And the soul attempts to bring its consciousness into the animal's lower mental body and centers. Remember, there's seven centers in it. The astral body in its seven centers, and the etheric physical body in its seven centers. Got to bring it into all three. Most of the souls didn't have too much trouble doing it in the lower mental or the astral. Actually, they were pretty successful in doing that. So the animal became conscious of feelings and conscious of thoughts, lower thoughts, thought forms, to rudimentary concepts dealing with spirits. The animal became a spiritual being, bingo bango, just like that. Great. But now you get to the etheric physical, and this is another story entirely, because the energy doesn't follow thought as well as you move into denser and denser realms, because the energy is becoming more and more gravitational. It wants to only just get together with other energy, and it doesn't care about spirit very much. It's not cooperative. So the energy in the centers of the heart and crown chakra in the etheric body of the animal that the soul tries to, we'll say, get some of its consciousness into kind of rebels. It rebels against the rest of the animal's nature, which is astral and lower mental. And this is dangerous. This is very dangerous for the animal, because within days or weeks, it may literally kill itself. Or it may just die because it can't control its astral and mental natures, coincide them with its physical or etheric physical body. So its astral nature may be it's afraid of, naturally afraid of some things. Let's say, I'll make something up, but it's naturally afraid of a big tall hill where it could fall over. And its senses in its physical body are not responding in nature to its astral nature, because the two are not connecting together very well. And some of it is caused by, strange thing, the interference of spirit. It doesn't get that this sudden awareness of spirit also changes its relative fear of death. In an animal, the fear of death is primal, which means that it avoids those things which will cause it, likely cause it harm, and it does so without much deliberation in an individual thought sense about its very nature and relationship to its creator or anything like that, because it doesn't have that. But now this new animal is suddenly confused, because it says, well, I want to go up to that hill and experience what it's like to be really free at the top of the hill, and maybe jump off the hill and see what might happen. Because, after all, that's a creative part of my existence now. I want to know what all these new things are about what it's like to be something greater than I am. Because it's seeking to grow more of itself, a new thing to it. It doesn't know what that is. And it says, gee, I want to be different. I want to be self-created. Being self-created when you just are a newbie can lead you into a very dangerous thing. So you go to the top of the hill and you say, gee, I think I could fly. So you jump off and you see, with maybe flapping your arms or thinking great thoughts, or maybe just thinking about reaching for the sun or whatever it might be, or the stars if it's at night. And you go, and the next thing you do is you land on your head, you break your head open, and you're dead. this happened. And maybe not exactly what I just described with the rules of plasma. But the point is, these sorts of experiments went on 22.5 million years ago. And most of these poor creatures killed themselves, needlessly, if you want to call it that, because they couldn't match their new individual consciousness coming from this newfound self structure, which comes from the development of the individual nature of the crown and heart chakras, and starting to become more like your creator, which means I'll just do what I want to do, different than what my group soul, because I don't have a group soul anymore, tells me to do. I'm just going to choose to do whatever I want to do. Well, some of your choices may be so foreign from your physical well-being and from other parts of your constituent pieces that you don't survive. And sure enough, they all died. Not a one. No survivors. Gone. How fast? I think it was like in weeks of time. They wiped themselves out. Well, that experiment didn't go too well. And so the extraterrestrials that came over to try that experiment said, oops, guess this isn't such a good idea. Maybe we've got to do a little more balancing, allow a little greater level of both sense and balance in the senses, especially in the two centers that are so difficult to develop in animals, which is the heart and crown chakras. And get those centers to all work together, because animals normally only have five senses. And now we're creating two more, and those two more have to, some animals do have a crown or a heart chakra, but then they're missing some of the other ones. Now we're putting everything together, and we're trying to make it like a human, and then we're going to introduce this individual nature, which is a godlike nature, that develops a self in the human. So it didn't work, and the self became a fatality. The self became self-destructive to the whole being about 22.5 million years ago or so. All right, give or take. You know, it might have been 22, it might have been 23. I mean, I'm giving you round numbers. All right, so they say, well, we'll come back 4 million years or so. We'll give it another try. And so by 18.5 million years ago, now they come in and they try this other thing again. Right? But by this point, the animals have evolved to a higher level. And there is much better, we'll say, development of the two extra centers. And they are closer to being in balance with the other five centers, looking more like a human. Possible. But still, you got to hope that when the self is formed, almost instantly, by the way, after you introduce this from the soul, remember, these are not being born. This isn't like a child as we think of it. It's an animal. You're introducing soul consciousness in on an individual level, which instantly develops the self. The danger here is that in a child, you'd have a parent taking care of it and all this other stuff. With these things, there was none of that. So that at this 18 million years ago, 18.5, whatever, that's not going on. So the 18 million years, bingo bango, they tried the same experiment or similar, and the results, unfortunately, are not that much better. You can say, well, come on, we've got 4 million years. There should be something going on here. And it just did not actually work because the self was formed so quickly that there was no regulation of the self at all. And again, the animal becomes, in effect, self-destructive. Now, in these animals, supposedly, they even destroyed each other and they did terrible things. I mean, it's just a mess. And so, so they say, well, we'll come back in 1.5 to 2 million years and we'll try it again. And maybe we'll come back with a different idea. And this also were different extraterrestrials. As far as I know, the first two experiments, some of the extraterrestrials were of the same type. Some were different. In the third try, totally different ones. these came actually from planets, and especially one of the planets, in our own solar system, the majority of them, rather than to be go very far away. The reason being is that they had a better understanding of some of the limitations of Earth and the physical nature of Earth, and they were a little better prepared for making what I would call to be some compromises. The original extraterrestrials were of such higher state of consciousness that they wanted everything to be totally hands-off. Okay, we'll allow the soul to do this, then it's up to the creature to just suddenly develop itself and be able to survive more than a few weeks or a month or two. And that's asking for, apparently, too much, because they didn't survive. So the next group of extraterrestrials to come, they say, hold on, we're going to have to stay here longer. We're going to have to help the self of these new humans be able to function, or else they're going to kill themselves again, and we're never going to get ahead of this, and we've already wasted millions of years. And this whole process is being done to save time, and it's not working. Evolutionary-wise, if you wait another 10 million, 20 million years, you probably could do it that way better. You'd still have to have the soul introduce the consciousness, but you'd be closer to what we have today in terms of how the self will respond. But they didn't. The idea on Earth was that amount of time was not available. As a matter of fact, we were already almost over the time at the 16 and a half billion years ago. So the object now was, okay, let's just change our viewpoint. We've got to be a little more hands-on with these creatures because, after all, they are humans and they need more nurturing than an animal. They have a self, and the self doesn't get instincts from a group soul. The self has drives. That's all it does. So the drives say, well, I need to get water, and I need to eat something. But it doesn't have a complex pattern of behavior that protects it. And if it doesn't, the self is going to possibly do something self-destructive. So the new beings come over with a different attitude. We're going to stay. We're going to be involved with these creatures maybe for one period of time. Not all of us will stay here at one time. We'll come and go, but it'll still be the same genre of extraterrestrials. And we will get these humans by a kind of parenting model now, which makes more sense if you think about it, to learn about themselves, develop themselves, and reach a point where they could procreate and stay alive. Now, some of the second ones, the middle ones of these animals, actually did procreate, but didn't go anywhere because they all ended up killing themselves anyway. But now they figured if they could just get a couple generations going of this thing, it would work out pretty good. There was another problem that was happening, and that was this whole thing was rushed to such an extent, and so much was involved in joining the consciousness to the etheric nature of the animal, that the animal remained much more an etheric being than it did a physical. It still had a physical body, but it had a huge, much bigger etheric body. So it was more, much larger in electromagnetic content. It was very energetic than we are, than humans are, or than most animals were at the time. So these are like hugely electrically endowed beings, the animals were, but they had no control over it, and their bodies could be as much as 50 feet tall in height, because not the physical bodies, they were pretty big too, but the electromagnetic nature was huge, way out there. So their auras, in our terminology today, could be 50 feet wide. Wow, 50 feet tall too. And so, although it's dampened by the Earth, so it doesn't go into the Earth, it's still a huge, big thing for the etheric body. And so that was another problem that they had to kind of deal with. Because there's all, I'll get into all the difficulties of this when you have that kind of huge electromagnetic body in a creature that is now becoming a human being. So, okay, so the new extraterrestrials, the one last ones, come here and they say, look, we're going to go with a different model. We know that the other extraterrestrials that have been here before have tried to be so hands-off. They want to be just like God, you know. Just everything is going to be by the choice and life. But it just didn't work. So we got to modify our plan. And so they choose to bring the souls back in focus. And the souls in Seoul, the individual souls in Seoul, the humans, human bodies, human-like bodies. And these bodies are more refined, but still highly etheric. And they look—they still look pretty apish by our standards. But they still have the seven centers, and the seven centers are all balanced together. You follow me on this thing? They're all balanced together, and they're much better than before. And the most important thing is, as soon as the self is formed, the extraterrestrials say, "Hey, we're here. Hello," and the animals go, Mama, Dada, you know, they immediately respond. A parental guidance is now achieved with these new extraterrestrials. Now, they didn't want to do this before because they are afraid of the contamination because they're these super beings, right? And they're like being, just like us, have, you know, taking care of animals. You know, they only have a certain level of response to us, and they may get the wrong concepts because these animals now have souls. The self immediately wants to emulate the parent. Hey, and it also has something called a personality. Now, what is a personality? It's the part of the soul that the soul gives to the human, in a sense, as its own, we'll call it, basic operating system. The personality is better than a computer, but not a lot better. It has certain, we'll say, on and off switches, and it seeks to control the life form of the person so it will survive. Now, before, when the self was created, it was immediately overcoming the personality, immediately, because the personality was of rudimentary design, at best, and these are all new souls in terms of the life forms they're dealing with that we call human, and the personality would be in a struggle to have much control over the self, so the self would just literally do anything it chose to do because it was, we'll say, too powerful too quickly in relationship to the programming. I mean that in a kind of similar sense, of the personality. Now, if you made the personality a lot stronger, then the self would suffer so badly that the person would never become human. So there was an imbalance there because of a lack of role or parental model to the animals. But now, hey, we got a solution, right? The solution is that the extraterrestrial said, we'll be your mama and daddy, and we're going to show you how it's all done. You know, we're going to help you out, but we're going to do two things. We're going to reinforce the personality and its ability to control when you're in danger. We'll show you the dangers. We'll show you how we'll be a facsimile of the personality in our parental model, and then we'll do the opposite. We'll show the self how to grow itself without causing great harm to the person, and allow the person to be free and creative and separate from us when we're not around. And even when we are around, we're going to give you as much freedom as is safe for you to have at your infantile level of development. And this worked. It actually worked. Now, there are some bad problems with the system, and I'll go into them as you will see. But nonetheless, it at least got us off the ground, as they say. I mean, if they kept doing the same thing over again, we would have kept killing ourselves because our personality would have been too rudimentary, our self would have been completely out to lunch and just wanting to be free and whatever, and between the two, we would never survive. So now we suddenly say, oh, parent, I will follow you, my personality will follow you and grow from it and develop. And this becomes a feedback, by the way, back to the soul, so the soul eventually says, I'm getting feedback from the extraterrestrials without them teaching the soul directly, just through the experience of their own human life form. They're getting it back. Anything the human life form does that is good, develops more consciousness, the soul keeps. If the life forms do terrible things, the soul never even knows about it. Isn't that weird? Only the good stuff gets through. Okay, so it's on a success model plan. It just, things get better. It gets better at creating personalities, and it also helps to, we'll say, get a self that's more in sync with the personality, so the whole thing works out better. Okay, so the self now, which is creating itself, remember that, it's creating itself, also looks forth into the parents how they are creative. This is a little bit of a rub now. These are extraterrestrial beings who are beyond human and have to be extremely careful, and they weren't careful enough, unfortunately, which may be, and remember, I told you, they're not perfect, and showing ways of being creative. But their ways of being creative are too far advanced in some circumstances. And this caused some disagreement between part of the animal human, the human now, who wanting to be like mom and dad, who are extraterrestrials and who have super abilities, and not being able to do that because the unfortunate thing is they're seeing something they're never going to be capable of until they're beyond the human kingdom. And they just say, oh, gee, I can't be like mom or dad. Well, then you end up with a conflict. You see, it's similar to children even today. If you present models to kids that they can't be because they're not capable of it, they rebel. And this level of dissension becomes so strong that eventually, instead of mom and dad being the good folks, they may be the bad folks to effectively these beings. Now, it didn't get terribly out of control, but it did at times create problems. No matter how hard the extraterrestrials tried to be human-like, they were still beyond, way beyond human, and they created these problems. Okay, not because they're evil. They weren't trying to do anything bad. But it's hard for them not to be who they are. And they had to stay for extended periods of time, and different ones came, and other ones left, and some were better at it than others. And eventually, you end up with a contamination model in this situation that can lead to a lot of problems, and it did. And it's the reason the original extraterrestrials didn't try this experiment first. They knew that that was a serious drawback. And they for sure would have had a harder time with it than the later ones, because the later ones weren't as far developed, so good, at least they had a better shot at it. But you could see that this is the nature, this is the problem, the nature of us. And we still have it today. I mean, the same thing goes on, you know, all the time with parents and stuff. I mean, but not anywhere nearer than if your parents are extraterrestrials who are superhumans. Then you've got a real problem. Even when they try to, you know, not show their consciousness so much, how do you, you know, where, you know, you, if you're going to really focus in on them, like, you know, that's what children do. And you have to think of these new humans as really being the first children. That's how I gained a better understanding of this. It's sort of the part I talked about, the logic elements and the thought elements besides just what can be remembered, because there's almost nothing in any Akashic record about any of the stuff I'm talking about right now. So it's just incredible that this is the foundation of the development of human beings. And it started with some problems immediately. Now, there's another thing that started happening, and that is that the personality said, oh, well, good, I'll be like mom and dad. Well, the mom and dad were supposed to only give the personality a little boost, show them, do this, don't do that, this is the better way so that you don't hurt yourself, this is the way so you help others to be good, etc. But they couldn't help themselves in some respects sometimes from, unfortunately, being a bit superhuman. And the personality scratches his head and says, but I don't have senses that work like your senses, so how could I ever do that? And eventually you end up with the personality saying, well, I'll just achieve that result in a much easier way. I'll just slam, bam, you can't do it, period, and I'm not going to tell you why because I can't figure it out anyway. And the personality becomes much more rigid and much more controlling and demanding than it should have been, okay? And then you end up with a rebellion between the self and the personality. You end up with a disorder in the personality itself of being over-controlling. And this actually happened. This developed into some humans that were now not so good. Even though their quote, parents were super beings, because they were super beings, it caused the rebellion and the personality and the disorder and the problems and et cetera. All right. There's another factor. The extraterrestrials were imperfect. They were perfect in their bodies. Their etheric bodies were exactly in line with their physical. All their centers were aligned perfectly. They were balanced. I mean, these are perfect beings. Okay, but you're not. Now you're this ugly, distorted wreck of a thing with a 50-foot-tall etheric body and 10-12-foot-tall physical body, and you don't look anything like them. What's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? I must be something like the worst thing in the world to be like this. Mom and Dad are beautiful beings. They have great, perfect auras. I can see them. They did. I could see them. And my aura is some kind of ugly, gross, grotesque thing that interferes with my ability to physically sense. Remember I told you there was something not so good about having a giant aura. Well, if your aura electrically is so great, your physical senses become relatively diminished. So when you get up and close and personal with other beings like yourself, or even like with mom and dad, you don't feel them the same way. As a matter of fact, there's such an exaggeration in the etheric part or electromagnetic part of these creatures that they are almost stilted to live much more etherically than they are physically. And it causes them to enjoy things more in the electromagnetic way than they do in a physical way. If they're supposed to be balanced, they don't have the balance. And they get more and more frustrated because mom and dad do. And so do all mom and dad's friends. Yeah. So you have a whole race of new humans who have an inferiority complex and don't even have their senses in the physical sense working right. Now you ask them to reach a certain age and to have babies. Because the next step in this whole thing is you can't just keep doing this process. As a matter of fact, the object was not to keep bringing souls in and have new humans created. You had to have birth. You had to have a real human being created so they became the parents to them. You understand what I'm saying now? Well, that took some doing because just even the act of procreation is a little bit difficult when you have such a huge etheric body and all kinds of other strange things and inferiority sensations and on and on. Even when they got them to procreate and to do so, that getting them to rear their children in ways that was good and humane was not so easy because of inferiority, because, well, how can I ever be like mom and dad were with my kids because I don't have any of their abilities, you know? They're super beings and I'm just a nothing. Yeah. That's the problem. All right. So our extraterrestrials came up with another idea. Because, I mean, listen, this is already not looking too good. They said, okay, we've got to train these people how to reduce the size of your etheric body, give up some of it, to increase the sensation and senses in your physical body. And actually, there was some adjustments made to the rays and other things that are focused in on the planet. Everybody working together to try to make this whole thing work out. And it took millions of years before they even approached what we would consider to be a normal etheric body. But as they began to shrink the etheric body and make it less dominating, at least these new humans started to behave more and more normally towards each other and towards just life itself. And the self became stronger because it could create better when there was a balance between the physical and the electromagnetic or etheric senses. So the self developed a more normal way of expressing itself. And then it said, this is what it's like to be human. Not so bad. And, okay, what did they do to achieve this? They actually introduced, this is going to sound weird, spiritual discipline of sorts to these very young humans. Young in the sense of just newly developed. And they found that that actually worked. You would think that that would make things worse because they already found everything in life to be almost impossible because it can't be like mom and dad. But the weird thing about this is that the self could immediately identify God. And so by being more spiritual and by helping, by the focus of the extraterrestrials more on spiritual development and less on the physical side, once the humans started procreating themselves, that could transfer over to something they can identify with. That was good. There was a bad part of this. That was the good part. The good part was over millions of years they developed spiritual discipline, which allowed them to actually control and reduce the size of their etheric bodies, improve the relationship and balance of the senses, do an amazing job of creating themselves into more and more normalized human beings. Oh, wow. And, of course, just the fact they were procreating instead of the soul coming in and doing this made a big jump right there. But they still had to work on it because of the initial nature still residually standing in for millions of years because it's such a radical approach to create a human being directly from a soul into an animal. Okay, so that's the good news. And the good news was it was pretty darn effective. Seriously. And the race itself became amazingly spiritual. They more spiritual than they were actually, in a sense, technologically developed or even developed in, we'll say, their mental development. Their mental development is nowhere near, even their astral development, nowhere near what it is today in humans, but yet they were spiritually developed because this is the only way that the extraterrestrials could get them to survive. There was a drawback. As they developed this accentuated God recognition basis, instead of seeing the extraterrestrials as parents any longer, which was relatively a short-lived period, they started seeing them as God. Because, after all, if you're working on being God, and these beings are helping you to be God themselves, they must be God. All right. Well, sounds great until you understand the consequences of this nature. If they are God, okay, but remember, they're really not, and they made some mistakes with them in the past, and they still make some mistakes in the present, and there's new ones that come in, even though they have pretty much a similar plan, they don't all respond to that. You got problems because they rebel. But they're not rebelling against a parent any longer. They're rebelling against God. Uh-oh. Yep. What is the definition of rebelling against God? people. So after just a few million years of working with these wonderful new humans, the extraterrestrials, by just the relationship with the new humans, opened the door to allowing them to become evil. Because they rebelled against what they perceived to be God in some of the behaviors and some of the interactions with the extraterrestrials. Sometimes it was just jealousy or downright frustration because they couldn't be like them all the time. So the spiritual discipline saved humanity, and it also opened the door, because of its premature nature, to evil. I know, this sounds like some kind of, whoa, why couldn't they just see that was going to happen and figure something else out? Well, I'm sure if they could have, they would have. And maybe they did see it as a serious probability, even, but they didn't have a better alternative. And I'm not sure if we as humans, were today become the extraterrestrials, we would have done anywhere near as good as they did. So, unfortunately, this race we're talking about is called the Lemurian race. And this whole process of the Lemurian race is a very strange idea, because they were really the third race in line. There were really two other races of humans, but those two races of humans never developed any physical form. They never had to adopt a physical body to an etheric body. And it was just the soul doing practice runs for millions, tens of millions of years to see how it could interconnect a lower mental, astral, and an etheric, but no physical body. And they actually did this as just ways of learning how to do this. Not because it was, in the long run, the way humans were ultimately going to end up being, because obviously we became physical creatures. But the physical side came in because to develop a full physical human, as I said, would have taken 10, 20 million years longer. And that was not part of the plan for it. You could say, well, why did the soul spend, and it isn't just any old, I mean, a whole bunch of souls came and went, to create a number of human-like, etheric, astral, and mental beings, but no physical, no dense physical, and not near the number of humans that we think of as humans today. Maybe in the thousands to tens or even 100,000 most. But it gave them practice, and it was necessary. And it allowed the development of the etheric form and etheric senses, which was critical to eventually developing it in an animal. So you should know that there were two other kinds of races of humans, but they were never physical. And we'll never find any sign of them having existed. Okay, so getting back to the story. All right, so we've got this whole other problem. The poor Lemurians, with all the troubles they were having, eventually corrected their etheric nature and their centers getting better in balance, and their self being in balance with their personality by spiritual discipline. And a wonderful idea in itself, except, again, the model for this was being done or controlled or fed, taught, however you want to talk about it, by super beings. And that screwed up the whole thing. You can start seeing why God is so hands-off, because it causes a bunch of problems. Eventually, the Lemurians developed a cantankerous, more hostile nature. They fought among themselves. And until they reached their sixth sub-race, they couldn't develop themselves without significant levels of evil creeping into some of them. They weren't a fully evil group of folks. They were at times tainted by evil, but evil never dominated sub-race. And in the sixth sub-race, they actually became very spiritual and virtually drove most of evil out of the race. Unfortunately, the last sub-race, the seventh, kind of went the opposite way and got very involved with form and lost almost too much of their etheric nature by the very same idea of their original spiritual understandings to diminish their etheric body. Well, they went too far with it. And then they became more physical than they did etheric, too much so. And then they became more evil. And really violently evil, terrible things and stuff like that. And so that their race did not end up in the best place, although they were the most spiritual race on an average, more spiritual than any other race, but not more conscious. And the sixth sub-race was more spiritual and more conscious than any of the other Lemurian sub-races. A very interesting, we'll say, series of events. Now, that's the prehistory of the beginning of human beings. And I definitely went through the fast approach, because if you realize the meaning, I go more into some elements of this. But the point is that the bottom line is that it was kind of like a compromise. If you want to cut things as short as we cut them, we being the souls that cave in and the extraterrestrials, etc., then you're going to need to ultimately give up the ability to block evil and the ability to make a very sacred planet quickly. So in order to develop a faster planet, evil became part of it. But there's another part of this whole thing, which you've heard me say before. Evil was always in the plan. The reason this whole thing was accelerated so much, in part, was to allow evil to develop so that humans would find unique new ways to overcome evil, especially in the mental sphere, and do so like right now where we are in our present development, so that other worlds could develop it not as a copycat, but use what we have as a tool or tools so that they never will succumb to evil in a mental way. Because mental evil is very dangerous and can create huge havoc, take over galaxies. It could do terrible, terrible things. So this is not a simple goal for our world. It's a big, huge experiment. Some of the extraterrestrials chose to have nothing to do with it. They said, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And some of the beings that are connected to Earth that were great, great beings, advanced, super advanced human beings, beyond human, beyond, way beyond human, said, you know, I'm not going to participate in this. And I just said, goodbye. Others said, I'm willing to go along with it. It's going to be pretty touch and go, because the system could fail. Bringing evil in so early into a world usually leads to fatality of that planet. And early means the very earliest of humans had some evil from, as I described, how it worked. So, okay. Boy, I'm looking at the time. Well, the next group of people that were developed on Earth, coming from the development of humanity in general, were Atlanteans. Now, Atlanteans lived in a different part of the world initially, but they still developed from effectively what were the more advanced bodies, effectively more advanced development of Lemurians. So you shouldn't think that the Atlanteans came from souls fresh into an animal body. It didn't work that way. So some of the Lemurians, especially from the sixth subrace of Lemurians, were really the forerunners to the Atlanteans, the earliest six subrace, and even some of the fourth subrace Lemurians actually had something to do. And they went off and actually left Lemuria and founded what we consider to be Atlantis. It was a separated continent, and it developed again a completely new kind of body, culture, etc. It focused on the development of the astral body. The Lemurians mostly developed the etheric physical. They still had an astral body, but it wasn't very well developed, and their centers had very limited consciousness. So their ability to be, we'll call it, have feelings, was limited to more fundamental elements of feeling rather than subtle. They were not what you would call the most loving. They loved, but they weren't. That wasn't the focus of the development. The Atlanteans were very loving, actually, and they developed a very high astral consciousness. They did, and they were trying to balance their astral senses, just like the Lemurians are trying to develop and balance their etheric and physical senses. They took what was the good parts of the Lemurians, effectively, and they added on to it by becoming focused on the astral sense and the astral senses. Yeah. And so these beings were of a completely different nature. And they weren't as strong or big, in the most part, than the Lemurians. And they also had a bit more mental development, but not necessarily on an individual basis, but on an average. Certainly, they were a bit more mentally developed. And so some of them reached fairly high levels of mental development, even closer to what we're like today. But most of them were more, we'll say, less mentally conscious as humans are in comparison to humans of today. Now, were there extraterrestrials involved with them? You say, well, why couldn't they just go ahead and go on their own? Well, as it turned out, that was part of the plan. Leave them alone. Because after all, we already introduced evil into the Lemurians. Why do we want to mess with the Atlanteans? Well, there became a contest between the seventh Lemurian subrace and the first Atlantean race. And it looked like the Atlanteans were going to be wiped out. The Lemurians were stronger in a theoretical sense, and as they could reach Atlantis because of changes in the physical geography of the planet, more easily they were wiping them out. And so it required some help just to keep the Atlanteans together as a race. And so some of these extraterrestrials decided, okay, we're going to have to come back in and make sure that the Atlanteans survive, or else there may not be an Atlantean race, and that will extinguish the human race in the world, because the Lemurians were going to die off no matter what. But it just wasn't going to be soon enough before they may kill off all the Atlanteans. So the extraterrestrials this time taught the Atlanteans how to defend themselves using certain emotional methods of battle and certain other kinds of concepts better against the much stronger and even so in some ways even better technologically advanced Lemurians, and at least technologically in terms of war. And this sounds like a good thing, because they actually won. They actually beat them off and did a good job, and you could say they virtually finished off the Lemurians. The problem is that, again, you have super beings teaching some elements of war and some elements of how to build a new kind of society to relatively still younger kinds of human beings, who were more like Neanderthals, or a little bit better than that, but Neanderthals were degenerated Atlanteans. But still, some of these early Atlanteans weren't that much better off than them. And they immediately took the aggressive nature of, in the emotional sense, that the extraterrestrials either subconsciously or deliberately, I don't know which, imbued to them, and they use this nature somewhat in, we'll say, excessively violent ways at times that allowed them to become more dark and eventually to develop some elements of evil. It took millions of years before it really all came out that way. And it didn't come out until they also took on the other nature that they started to notice more, because they did have a more mental nature, that as they developed more and more of that mental nature, they became more egotistical. Now, I don't think the extraterrestrials that were helping them were necessarily egotistical, but the Atlanteans, in trying to mimic some of what they saw in the extraterrestrials, just in a surface way, became egotistical, and some of them then became arrogant, which is like egotism with no love for other things, and that's a terrible way to be. And so this entered into the poor Atlantean society, again, as a contamination from extraterrestrials, there was, you could say, well, they should have never done it. But then it looked like there was going to be an end to humanity. The Lemurians were certainly going to die off. They were going to degenerate and eventually die off. And there was nothing that would have stopped that. And you could say, well, why didn't they just slow up those rays, because that's what was changing and causing degeneration over time. But that would have put us back to the very beginning of the problem, which was nobody wanted to slow it up, because that was the plan for Earth. This is God's plan. So you have to take the good with the bad. And the bad in this case, again, becomes this evil entering into what was a pretty good race of folk. And that's a terrible outcome for what seemed to be a very promising situation. So what am I telling you? I'm telling you that extraterrestrials did a lot of good things, but just the very fact that they were more advanced and were beyond human created problems for the humans that were developed here on Earth. There's a double-edged sword to this process. Now, some of you are, you know, the Trekkers, the Trekkies are saying, well, see, it's just like Star Trek. You're not supposed to go in there and let them know you're there, because it screws them up. And there's, it's an interesting truism, because, yeah, although that was just more advanced humans going in and dealing with less advanced humans and probably screwing them up. Well, yeah, non-contact until the consciousness of the people is good enough to understand warp drive or whatever, or some kind of technological yardstick, which I think is not necessarily the true yardstick. But the point is, yeah, there is that already within our culture. We certainly buy into this. There's many people who have studied other races, you know, and they try to not do this, and sometimes they do anyway. But it's even scarier when you're not talking about one human affecting another human, but a superhuman, a super being. They have a much more profound effect. And then we come to full circle to tonight's show. You come around and you look at all the information that we have about God and the Bible, etc., and Bible, and religions. And it's all contaminated by the effect of, in my opinion, of extraterrestrials trying to do good, and who are super beings, and the misunderstanding of these beings being God when they aren't God, and even the things they taught being misunderstood, and even the things that they're trying to do and why they're doing, particularly their motives being misunderstood. So that it all gets wrapped up into a confusion, and in terms of present day, it has, in a very adverse way, affected what I think is most of the precepts in religion. not any one religion, just generally, that God is a deterministic God in most religions, whereas the God in Angel's Wisdom is a God that seeks to so much not determine as to be way outside of anything that these extraterrestrials did. Because the God of Angel's Wisdom is a God who truly allows life to grow itself, which also is its only means, by its own choosing, God's only means, of growing, by its own choice. And that's the only way God, in its plan, can achieve what it wants, which is growth without it being repetitious puppet show kind of nonsense. How amazing when you consider the story. I mean, as I'm explaining it, the plan of God is really what is somewhat being distorted by the insufficiency of even superhumans to be God. Or else they wouldn't be superhumans, they would be a God creating their own universe. That's the difference. Our appreciation for these problems also gives us a greater appreciation for God. Because God is not doing the mistakes that we're talking about. God created life, that's true. In a sense, it created. But life is also self-created. And the extraterrestrials, they are creating themselves too. So God didn't interfere with them doing these things, some of them wrong. But God allows all these things to be so that life can be more abundantly created in a way that is self-created. You could create more life, but it will be a cookie-cutter creation. Everything will be like everything else. And then you can create infinite amounts of life as quickly as you want. But the universe will be a boring, repetitious nonsense. Not a creator of its creator, but a redundant nonsense with no meaning. And God, in its wisdom, said, that's not going to do any good. Who would want that? Present-day religions espouse many doctrines that suggest just that thing. And it's wrong. It has to be wrong. Because the good news is the universe doesn't look anything like that. And the good news is also that God has to be far more conscious and far more a great being than that. Okay, so we're virtually out of time, I know. I hope tonight's show has really brought together, there was a lot more to say, but extraterrestrials, God's plan, and prehistory. You didn't think I could do it all at one time. Well, I kind of did, but in a different way. Hopefully tonight really has allowed for a new revelation about what this great plan is and how it actually has worked here on Earth, or not worked, depending upon how we are to look at it. I'd say, considering the odds against us, we're not doing too badly, but then again, we may not make it, so I'm not sure how that means. And again, anything I said tonight should be open to suspect, and I doubt very seriously that it's even 90% accurate. But if it's 70% accurate, I think it's doing some service. And if it's 80 or 85, great. That's wonderful. Well, we're out of time for right now, and I hope you've enjoyed this show. I have in explaining it to you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.